Guten Morgen. Tis
yes.
everyone's favorite day of the week.
It is.
Fascism Friday. And I know I feel bad, but every time my brain wants to go to saying German sayings for fat.
I know.
It's
I
not
know.
It's
those
not
poor,
fair.
Those poor Germans.
Yeah. With their Handschuhs, which is the word for mitten. Handshoe. So cute. That's the cutest thing ever. The handshoe. Yes. I'm like, oh, it's adorable. The whole Nazi thing, you're forgiven because the handshoe is so cute.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's not fair. I'm just being facetious. Yeah.
And the other day, Lisa said to me, look, give us some good fascism. So she's excited about Fascism Friday.
Kathleen wants to put it, a friendly functioning Friday to you. That's the opposite of Fascism Friday.
That's the opposite, yes.
You're part of the resistance. That's great.
You're feeling very cheery this morning. And hello to CK.
Morning, CK.
CK, I'm really sorry you've been struggling with your nerve pain. I hope you're feeling better. It really sounds well. I guess introductions. I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
I'm Ash Van Steenwijk. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And Laura is live and speaking German.
Guten Morgen, es ist Faustlingwetter in Denver.
Okay. I don't know what a Faustling winger is, but it sounds kind of exciting.
No, it was Faustlingwetter. It must be like it's raining in Denver? Faustlingwetter? I don't know what it is.
It's getting wetter and wetter all the time.
Faustlingwetter in
Quick,
Denver.
Get to sorry. The chopper.
I'm so sorry for the Germans. You deserve better than me doing my vague Schwarzenegger, who's Austrian, not German, right. Accent. It's not a tumor.
Okay, grab my hand. All right, so we're talking about the atypical Messiah or neurodivergent Messiah, which was a thought that came to me at 4 in the morning on Monday morning.
As many of your thoughts do.
As many of my thoughts do, yes. Usually not very good ones, but this was a particular, I like this one. So, and I just wanted to take up a comment that somebody made on Monday about, you know, well, what are the problems of looking at this? And, you know, and brought up some problems that were very real. We tend to want to fetishize mental illness or romanticize it or fetishize things like neurodivergence and, you know, almost want to make it like this fake sort of superpower or something like that. And
it's kind of a variation of like, old man Jones is blind, but he can see better than the rest of us. Like there's a little right. bit of that. And I think that's what he's right. pointing to, which is like, okay.
Yeah.
That's a fair.
Although concern. I have to say, old man Morgan Freeman was super cool as the blind dude in that post-apocalyptic movie. That was really amazing. Cool. I don't remember what it's called. I think it was Morgan Freeman.
Are you talking about the Denzel Washington film, The Book of Eli?
Oh, right. Denzel Washington. Yes.
Yeah, but that was pretty cool. It's like, wait, I don't want to spoil the ending, but I was about to spoil the ending.
Yeah, don't spoil the ending. But it's a great, if you're into post-apocalyptic violent type movies, it's a really good one.
With Denzel and the Bible.
Denzel and the Bible. Doesn't get any better than that, really. Think about it. Anyway, the process comment that I want to make about this, because I agree that there are those challenges and problems, but But this is something that I feel like we see all the time when there is a white normative situation, whether that's, you know, an image or a way of doing things. You know, for example, the grammar police. There was this whole thread we got into about this the other day. Mm-hmm. You know, when there is a white normative way of doing things, and then somebody suggests, well, let's center something different, right? Mm-hmm. So let's center a different way of speaking, or let's center that it's okay to have different grammar, or let's center, you know, blackness with Jesus, or queerness, or neurodivergence. Immediately, what will happen is that usually white people start talking about, well, there are problems with doing that, so let's be careful and let's either not do it, or let's, you know, make sure we're doing it right, right? Not doing it with the problems. And two things about that. One is those, you know, white folks have not been particularly concerned about all the problems that centering whiteness has caused for hundreds of years. They haven't said, oh, let's stop doing this because it's causing a lot of problems. And two, the other issue is that by immediately bringing up what the problems are of the new way of doing things, you effectively keep the status quo. And so I just want to note that I would rather say, yeah, let's fully embrace some very different image and see how that feels and see how that plays and sees what are the good aspects of that. And then, of course, you know, humans can screw everything up. So there's always going to be problems with whatever we do. Let's look at the problems later rather than right up front to try to prevent the exploration to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best version of this concern is sort of it fetishizes it in a way that it's dismissive, like, kind of it's the least of these conundrum. Like, so people will, like when doing hospitality, people would often say, you know, if you, whoever you've done to the least of these, you've done unto Jesus. And so welcome every homeless person as though they're Jesus. And so then instead of seeing them, you're using them as a utility for your own piety. I mean, that's the mm-hmm. concern. And I see that a lot. And it's a valid concern.
Yeah.
Now yeah. The issue is like, what do you like? Okay. Well, what do we do about this? Is really what it comes down to. And to me, it's like, and the way you said centering, it makes all the difference. If we're centering neurodivergence when we're talking about the divine, meaning there isn't this normative thing that's healthy and good, the virile white man with everything functioning at optimal, like Captain America, right? It's kind of like, ironically, the Aryan... like example. So perfect. Everything's working the way it's like, never freaks out, never wants to sleep in because he's overwhelmed. Catches every social cue the way that they're meant in our capitalist society. Like perfect, whatever. Okay. And then everything outside of that is deviant. If we're going to say no, let's center it on the fact that neurodivergence is the norm. That's the question. So in the part of what's happening here when we're talking about Jesus as neuroatypical, we're trying to center it, not fetishize. Like, and I agree, like, okay, we can't just make, oh, yes, these crazy people teach us things that we wouldn't otherwise know, so we need to keep a few around to feel better about ourselves. Like, if that's the concern, like, yes, that sucks. But what we're talking about is centering it, and this is something a lot of people don't like theologically. That people want to be like, no, Jesus was probably a cisgendered dude, probably kind of Palestinian looking when we see pictures of Palestinians today. And so anything that's different than that is some sort of theological fancy shit that's a distraction and it's giving fodder to the biblical, to the evangelicals who already play it too fast and loose. And the reason why it's important to say, like James Cone said, God is black, for, you know, people to say Jesus is queer, it's because it's asked, like, for Christians, Jesus is the archetype of what it means to be human. And so if we're going to do meaningful theological work about what it means to be human, we have to explore in what way does the divine, do we see our experience in, reflected in the divine and what it means to be human? So if someone wants to put the brakes on that before we can even have that conversation, I'm like, okay, then we're just going to get stuck with what we have. Yeah, and that sucks.
Exactly.
So
yeah, and to me, the way this plays out very much connects to this issue of fascism, right? Because you can see what the problem is with, you know, having God as the certain archetype of, quote, the perfect, right? Which is that, you know, when you go to round people up and put them in camps and gas them, you know, you don't find the healthy cis white dudes to do that. You pick all the people that are outside of the sphere, right? And so you know, so you, anybody that is seen to be deviant, anybody that's seen to be, you know, not perfect, they're the ones that then get rounded up by the fascists to be killed. And that's what happens when you have centered a particular type of normalcy, and you have said that actually that's what God embraces. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it's very, very problematic for trying to create a just and equitable society. We've got some comments coming in.
Donna writes, is not the problem biblical literalism over and against its richness as the Christian metamyth? She goes on to write, defining richness as diversity of all sorts and everything, everyone. I mean, it is a problem.
Yeah.
I would love to hear you reflect more on that, because I think biblical literalism is a problem, but also at the same time, I mean, fascists haven't always been biblical literalists. So to me, there's ways to be figurative and mythological to reinforce a sort of dominant thing. So I guess in America, biblical literalism certainly plays a big role in reinforcing a dominant authoritarian thing.
Right. And I would say that in a way, it's almost sort of the other way around, that biblical literalism is a symptom of this way of thinking, right, of creating a norm that is absolute and that you have to abide by. And of course, biblical literalism was one of the seven fundamentals that were encoded in the early 20th century to say, these are the fundamentals of the faith that you have to accept, you cannot question, you cannot talk about, you cannot overturn. Right. That was all created to basically help bulwark this particular kind of what has now become very rabid Christian nationalism. But it was, you know, it was part of the Christian white supremacist project. Yes, it does attempt to stamp out diversity for sure.
Laura writes, the grammar police thread on my wall lost me a Facebook friend, but the overall fragility and downright cruelty on that thread is epic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing. Right. And to me, again, this is a perfect example of this similar process where you are trying to create a norm, create a standard that is absolute, that is seen as the best, and that, you know, without that, you can't have language. It was just amazing.
Donna writes, true, Laura, but as a former nitwit of that genre, since I'm an editor, I needed to be schooled. James has a provocative claim here. Captain America was neurodivergent. Is that, I can't remember if that's part of the storyline or not.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
But, you know, I apologize for making assumptions, but there is something about like the idea of the super soldier, like, anyways, I could go off on that, but like the Nazis are trying to create a super soldier. So the United States needs to create a super soldier to stop them. And so now we end up having our own Aryan master kind of figure. There's so much about fascism built into superheroes to begin with that I wish they'd explore more than they have. CK writes, the construct of whiteness normal denies the color of culture. For sure.
Yeah.
Donna writes, the difference between normative and normal. To me, that's a fuzzy, not clear difference. But anyways, how many folks understand the terms, much less can hold the tension of the diversity of all? Listening to Ash, why hold to the normative of human Jesus when the allness of the divine Christ is the ideal in light of Imago Dei? That's a big one. I'm not a big fan of going universal for things because to me, I am very much into particular and embeddedness and context and not wanting to make a move towards a universal Christ because it just so happens most people who talk about universal Christ are white and then they inject their white neoliberal ideas about oneness into that. But I think there's something about what you're saying. It's just to me, Christ isn't a concept. To me, in my experience of the mystical tradition is the mystical experience I have with Jesus is with someone named Jesus, who is a particular person. So that's how I tend to roll. But I also understand that there are people that have more of a perennial perspective and kind of wanting to see the oneness Christ in all of humanity and the cosmic Christ. That's fine, but that's not how I function. I don't know if you want to add.
I guess what I would add to that is, I mean, first of all, I completely agree with and resonate with what you're saying, and the appeal to the universal is often, coming from at it from the place of the contemplative tradition, the appeal to the universal is often an intellectual abstraction. And as we come more down to earth, so to speak, in our contemplative practice, what we are met with is the particular, is all of the diversity of the emanations of the universal that exists all around us and in us. And, you know, we're kind of covering that landscape most of the time. Mm-hmm. And then every once in a while, we get maybe glimpses of this universal and this oneness. But more often than not, to continue to sort of push towards that, particularly within social oppressive contexts. And again, I think that this fascism is a manifestation of that. I mean, one thing to say is, well, you know, if I know the universal and the universal looks like me, then I want to get rid of everybody else that doesn't look like that, because then I've created the universal here on Earth. And then, of course, that becomes a horrible nightmare. It's tricky.
I have so much I could say about that, but I don't want to get lost from the topic. CK writes, could one say the mystery of faith is the abnormal of things not yet seen? Sure. I think I never know
like that. Yeah. I kind of like that. Yeah.
Catherine suggests average, ideal, or normal people don't actually exist. Okay. What about Nicolas Cage?
Yeah.
I mean, he's the kind of ideal. There are a lot of interesting, horrifying stories about this with body shapes and attempts to standardize military clothing and equipment, for starters.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. And that's, to me, that's the, this is the, again, back to this tension. Like, if we're going to like lift up neurodivergence, disability, different things that are maybe what we would consider marginalized experiences that are outside of the norm, it can't be in this way of just like saying, oh, these people are, they're people too, and let's be condescending. To me, it really is about like, we need to do this in a way where we smash the idea of what normal is, because to me, normal is oppressive.
Yeah.
The way, at least the way it's used generally in society, it's oppressive because it's, I mean, that's, and so this is where it's funny, like the comments of going back to the grammar stuff. People get really pissed off if you say, well, you know, insisting on proper grammar is oppressive. They're like, okay, snowflake. Oh, Jesus. I'm like, as though we haven't used language to police and oppress people. Like, as though that's just some kind of inconsequential thing. I remember even just like in the 80s, the Ebonics conversation took on sinister and horrible turns, and it was tied in with crack culture. Really, the problem isn't that Black people need to speak Ebonics. It's need fathers in the homes. Like, it all ties in together. It's in language is one of the easiest ways to please people.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Catherine, another area where you see this to very, actually, literally deadly consequences is in the medical world. So in medical school, and I don't know if they're still doing this, but I know there's tons of literature out there that did this. So there probably is some of that. You know, in medical school, every time they start talking about physiology or how drugs work or, you know, any kind of treatments, they would talk about the 70 kilogram man. Right. I mean, this literally was a phrase that you heard like every day in medical school. Right. Everything was about the 70 kilogram man. And obviously, this is highly problematic. Like, you know, if that's what you're learning about. And so, you know, now, for example, this whole thing of, you know, Black women in childbirth being at very high risk because you have all of this embedded racism in the medical system, where, you know, doctors will not listen to these Black women when they talk about being in pain, when they talk about the fact that there's something wrong. And it's as I said, it's literally deadly. Another example that I just came across, this was an article that Gregory Bentley shared 2 days ago, which is just, I mean, the level of revulsion and rage that comes up in me when I see things like this. So, you know, in the NFL, they recently set up this payment program for people who have gotten these permanent brain injuries from playing football. And it turns out now some, you know, behind the scenes emails have been revealed. That and one of the ways they figured out how much money you would get is they had to have a test, an analysis for how damaged you were, right? And it turns out that when they were calculating this, they were applying a racial cognitive scale, and so basically, Black players were started off as being assumed to be more cognitively impaired than white players. And so therefore, when they would test being damaged, they would say, oh, you're not damaged as much, basically because Black people start off being more stupid. And so there are all these families of guys who have, a couple of them have now died, who got no money out of this. And if they had been white, they would have raided to get money, right? And this is, I mean, it's just unbelievably obscene, right? But this is exactly the kind of thing that happens. I mean, this is all of this, you know, you could throw all of this under the label of fascism, where if you have this normative particular situation that, you know, the 70 kilogram white guy is the best and most normal example of humanity, you know, there's some really bad consequences that come out of that.
Well, and the thing is, it's sneaky, because what ends up happening is most people know that it's not a good idea to say that certain ethnicities are less human than white people. In fact, I don't know if I know anybody who actually would think those in those terms. Now, functionally, though, I see that. I don't know. Like, I
just read the comments in the Star Tribune sometimes. Well, to me, it's almost people that say that.
To me, it's almost irrelevant if people think that or not, because practically speaking, people think the equivalent to it. So what happens is we have this ideal of like what a good person is supposed to look like, and then that's wrapped up in authority systems and power, and so people who don't fit that are seen as lesser than, and we don't have to say they're less human. It's just if I go dressed up as Mark in like my best clothing to go try to get a loan, I'm going to do better than if like, oh, there's a trans woman here to apply for a loan. And the difference between if I was like, yes, I would like to procure a loan today versus like, I don't know, some sort of like slang, like, fuck, I need a loan or whatever, right? So there's these things. Now, people say, well, why do you have to bring swearing into this? This is always like, this is a petty thing. Because it all ties together.
Yep.
There's certain ways, polite discourse, proper discourse, etiquette, presentation, language uses, how you're embodied, what sort of presence you have. Like, then you get into class stuff about how much money. All this stuff is tied together. And so saying Jesus is queer, Jesus is neuroatypical, Jesus is black, like these things might irritate people. And yes, there's downsides. But part of the liberationist move is to say, fuck this authoritarian system of better versus over and against other people. It's all based, as Catherine says, on a set of myths that keeps certain people at the center of power.
Right.
And so we need to say, fuck that shit. And for those of us who really like Jesus or have a connection to the divine, to me, this is holy work saying, fuck that shit.
And Michelle said, fuck.
That shit. That shit is silent. Right. So I used to work at group homes called People 2. And the beautiful people that lived there were mentally disabled, blind, and deaf. That gave me a truly wonderful experience in understanding how life works. Mm-hmm. Susan writes, football generally drives me nuts. The game, the violence, the good system, American gladiators.
Yeah. No, that's a whole other that's a whole other topic.
I don't really follow the sports ball stuff, but yeah, it just doesn't make sense. Like, I mean, I will say it's more interesting than watching people play chess. Even though I like chess better. I mean, that's a provocative claim. Donna writes, the tension of diversity is in human Jesus, the divine Christ, the divine incarnated as the human individual. No. I think I know what you're saying is that, but fascism is part and parcel, sadly, of the dualistic ideological damage of the document of discovery, which permeates everything. So up with
FT. What's that shit? Fuck
so that up shit. With FT. Okay. Is that... Is FTAs, is that like an official shorthand for saying fuck that shit?
I don't know.
I want it to be.
There we go.
Yeah. I mean, you had a lot in there that I agree with. Yeah. And like, there's certainly like, to me, I have a lot of friends who just want to jettison all the Jesus stuff altogether, which I'm sympathetic towards. But it is interesting. Like, if our understanding of the incarnation doesn't like cause us to FTS oppressive things, then I think it is worse than bad. Like Christianity that reinforces stuff, it'd be better to never exist. FTS. Yeah. CK writes, I think vulnerability is a reason why people need normal. Yes.
And Donna, is that vulnerability or is that value? Maybe I was supposed to be vulnerability.
I thought it was vulnerability. Yeah, I don't know if there's
value mobility. All right. Apparently that is for real.
I'm glad this is just, you just opened up a door to a new hallway in my life. Yes. Ellen writes, I'm neurodivergent. And on top of that, I was homeschooled. In a lot of ways, I didn't even know what normal was. When I was around kids, kids constantly told me I was weird. I wore this like a badge and would respond good, then I'm not normal and boring. Part one of two. Look, Ellen is doing the way that we love getting comments. breaking it up into parts. That's so good. Someone's learned from Twitter. Ellen writes, continues, I imagine Jesus being taunted for his mom being a whore for preaching the true good news and found comfort and solidarity with Jesus. I'm so glad to integrate neurodivergency in Jesus's character now. Thank you. I relate to that a lot. I mean, I think I was a little less willing. I mean, it takes me a lot to be weird on purpose, like to embrace it. But to me, I found part of the reason I liked Jesus so much as a kid is like I felt that somehow Jesus understood me better than the people around me. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, we can worry about this fetishizing thing or doing this wrong. But to me, like it matters that Jesus is weird and not just some sort of like esoteric way, but that there's a way in which Jesus experienced difficulty in life because he was different that I can relate to. Yanis writes, Christ was crucified by the fascists of his era and the religious leaders, for sure.
Yeah.
James writes, the lectionary passage for this Sunday is the one where Jesus welcomes the children and commends them to us as an example of how we should welcome the kingdom.
Right.
There's one or two. What's the second part, James? Are you just messing with us? Because you're a trickster.
Right. And there we go.
The decentering the norms is right there in the text.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and of course it's even more decentered than we in our context would read this, right? Because, you know, in our day and age, right, for many people, children are the center of our lives, right? And parents are constantly centering their children and doing everything for their kids and all of that. And you know, we don't have the experience of children being sort of property and or disposable and irrelevant, and certainly not someone that you would listen to or use as an example. and so, you know, I think that this to me is one of the scriptures in our day and age that has lost much of its power. And it's a great example of how things change in context. But in Jesus's time, you know, this would have been completely incomprehensible. It was so outside the norm.
Yeah, because it's, again, like, because it's not like they didn't value children. It's just their status wasn't such that you gave them any attention until they got to that point. And so this is, again, like so much of what Jesus says is changing status and decentering, like, and we don't see it because we've adopted this idea of a nuclear family, which Jesus stepped like anything like that in the Hebrew scriptures that would have been lifted up, Jesus kind of stepped down. So the kid stuff gets into that. Donna writes, because kids are radically decentered until they're taught otherwise. Yanis writes, God loves everyone that has a heartbeat and gave his breath to and frowns upon enslavers and imperial behaviors that take free will away. He'd like people to choose not covered or raped into norms. I'm not exactly sure what the ending means.
Yes. Yeah, she does love everyone. All right. And then?
Ellen writes, I type the 1222 comments all at once, then copy and paste where the break is natural so I can post them all.
Oof. Mad skills.
Yeah.
Well. All right. Well.
Coerced. I see.
Yes.
Coerced or raped into norms. Yes. Norms.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and one of the things, I was thinking about that with Ellen's comment, right? The key thing, you being homeschooled, right? So you had this environment that you were in. And, you know, not that it was a perfect environment, but, you know, this was your normal. So you felt good in that. And, particularly in junior high, when I went to this one school, I mean, I was mercilessly bullied for being weird, for being different. And, you know, when you're being tortured every day, you desperately want to be normal. And you are being coerced into being normal. And so so that's the other part of this, right? Is what environment, you know, and that's the other thing about this centering piece, just something to kind of close out with, right? So it's not the idea of romanticizing folks who are different, but saying, all right, well, you know, if they contain the divine, then don't we want them to have the same flourishing existence as everybody else? Well, the answer should be yes. So, you know, torturing them for their difference or exterminating them for their difference is then a deeply sacrilegious act.
And with that,
all right.
It's the end of another Fascism Friday, and we'll see you all next week.
See you next week. Thank you very much for all your comments. Bye.